Welcome to International Edition, where we take a closer look at stories of the day, social media, and entertainment. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, the Taliban attacks the Afghan parliament. The international focus on nuclear negotiations with Iran. Is Twitter in trouble?
They have a great number of users, but have failed to figure out how to turn a serious profit.
And a visit with the music of Kelly Clarkson, coming up right here on The Voice of America. Taliban militants have targeted Afghanistan's parliament. Reporter Ayaz Ghul is in our South Asia Bureau in Islamabad, where he is following the story and joins us on the line. Hi, Ayaz.
Hi.
Hi. What have you got on this story so far?
Well, this was quite a dramatic development this morning in Kabul because, the capital is, especially the parliament, is located in a high security zone, but still a group of Taliban suicide bombers, they were seven in number according to officials in Kabul, they managed to storm the parliament. They started the attack with a car bomb at the main entry gate, and then some of them tried to enter the building, but that's where the security forces stopped them. However, the siege lasted for like nearly two hours, and now the security forces say all the seven attackers have been killed. But it has sent a very strong message that whatever the Afghan security forces have done in terms of dealing with the Taliban insurgency after the withdrawal of the NATO forces, they have so far not been able to prevent the Taliban from launching these kind of high-profile attacks. And at the same time, the insurgent group has made some territorial gains in the northern provinces.
Could you please describe the scene there where these explosions occurred?
As soon as the attack occurred, what we were told by the Afghan Interior Ministry officials that some of the bombers have entered the building. In fact, there was an under-construction building nearby the parliament, and some of them took positions on that building. But they were then surrounded by security forces, Afghan army and police, and all the roads then leading to the parliament were cordoned off, were sealed by the security forces. And one could see the smoke rising from inside the parliament building. And when the first explosion occurred, the parliament was in session, and it was basically readying to endorse the presidential decision or the president, the defense minister designate Masoom Stanakzai. But then the first explosion happens at the gate of the parliament. It was so powerful that the session was being broadcast live, and we could see that the speaker's chair, he was presiding the session, and his chair shook so hard, but still he tried to tell the lawmakers that maybe it's a short circuit in the electrical wires. But then there were three more explosions following the first one, and that's when all the lawmakers started running for their lives. And what we have been told by the Afghan officials that so far all the parliamentarians are safe and were unhurt in this attack.
Has the government made any specific statements concerning this attack today?
We just have a brief statement from the Interior Ministry spokesman, Siddiq Siddiqui, who says that the situation is under control. All the seven attackers have been killed by the security forces, and that there are 31 or up to 30 people, mostly civilians, have been wounded, and they have been shifted to the hospital. But we don't know the nature of we don't know who these people are, whether they were at the exterior gate when the first explosion occurred, but at least this has been confirmed that no lawmaker is among those who have been wounded.
Well, thank you very much, Ayaz.
Thank you.
Joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palchevsky with a look at what is being said today in social media. And Andrew, what are they saying about Afghanistan?
Well, as we just heard in that report, this bombing has occurred at the parliament. And this actually, we were just talking about, was the first place that I saw the news was on Twitter. Afghanistan's become a top trending topic, and people are flooding on there to report the news initially and then offer their accounts and share photos of the attack and that kind of thing. Also trending on social media today, Europol, which is the European police agency, they're going to take a stand against ISIS and have a full police force that's going to counter. They said it's 100,000 tweets a day from about 45 to 50,000 different accounts that support ISIS. So they're creating this task force. It's supposed to start July 1st, and they're going to be trying to shut down these accounts, stop these messages before they can get out there and recruit people, because this is one of the big recruiting tools for ISIS is social media, especially among young people. Another topic we have today, there's a festival. It's the Lychee and Dog Meat Festival in Yulin, China.
That sounds disgusting.
Yeah, and people are absolutely saying that on social media. They're saying it's disgusting in terms of food, but disgusting how they're taking these dogs. A lot of these dogs are stolen pets, and they're using these dogs to, in this festival, 10,000 dogs apparently that they want to eat.
It's a lot.
So social media is taking hashtag stop Yulin 2015, hashtag it's no festival. Celebrities weighing in because this has been, you know, just like you said, disgusting. A lot of people taking issue with this, and a lot of people have pets here in the U.S. and around the world, and they think, oh, my pet, I wouldn't want them to be eaten. So people are speaking out against that and raising this issue from maybe a smaller local festival to now a global issue where everyone's weighing in. And then between yesterday and today, we have a lot of tweets about Father's Day. This is the holiday here in the U.S. and around the world to celebrate fathers. We have First Lady Michelle Obama weighing in on Twitter, posting picture of President Obama and their daughters.
I saw that. That's a cute picture.
It is.
The beach or something.
Yeah, they're on the beach. It's a nice little picture. We have Justin Timberlake. It's his first Father's Day. His son was just born this past year, so he's celebrating and sending out a picture of him and his newborn son. Prince Charles is sending out a picture with Prince William and Prince Harry. So a mix of people honoring their fathers, of, you know, wives honoring their husbands who are their fathers or their children. But it's interesting. It's no longer sufficient, I guess, to just send a card. You have to put up photos on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and people have been doing so in large numbers.
Well, you can save a few bucks that way, too.
It's free, and you probably get to a lot more people and show a lot more people that you care, I guess.
That's right. Well, thank you, Andrew.
Yeah.
You're tuned to the VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute. Pope Francis recently issued an urgent warning and challenge to the people of the world to recognize and take action against the harm the pontiff says humans are inflicting on the earth. Environmentalists welcome the Pope's letter or encyclical, one of the highest-ranking documents a pope can release. Climatologist Ray Bradley from the University of Massachusetts.
The issue of global warming and environmental degradation has become so political that it's really great to have somebody who has no political agenda speak on the topic.
Some climate change skeptics were not moved by the Pope's writings. James Taylor is with the Heartland Institute.
I fear that the Pope is getting poor advice. I believe that these actions to address global warming are unnecessary and counterproductive.
Pope Francis and his encyclical on climate change has been hailed as a major intervention in the climate change debate. I'm Rick Pantaleo.
International negotiations on a comprehensive nuclear agreement with Iran is entering a final full week. VOA's Victor Beatty joins me here, and he's following the story. Victor, what's the latest?
Well, thank you, Susan. Iran's parliament voted overwhelmingly on Sunday to deny access to international inspectors of military sites and documents and block interviews with nuclear scientists as part of any deal. The measure also demands the complete lifting of all sanctions as part of any comprehensive nuclear accord. It must be ratified by the Guardian Council. That's an unelected body close to Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei to become law. On the same day Sunday, French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius, who was among several European Union officials meeting his Iranian counterpart, Mohammad Javad Zarif, on Monday, said any nuclear agreement with Tehran must be verified. Speaking in Israel alongside Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who of course opposes that agreement, Fabius cautioned that, in his words, at the point where we are, things are not clear. There is a need to clarify, make precise, and ensure the deal is robust. Well, last Friday, U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby was asked to affirm that U.S. policy remains that Iran must give access to the International Atomic Energy Agency to resolve any possible military dimensions of its program.
As part of any deal, and before there can be a deal, it needs to be determined. And this is something that was agreed to both in November and then in Luzon in the spring in April. I think I've made it clear, though, they've made it clear in Luzon that the IAEA will need to have the access it needs to resolve the issues of possible military dimensions of Iran's program. And without the parameters for that sort of access, there's not going to be a deal. And we've said that no deal is better than a bad deal.
And that's U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby.
And, Victor, you've spoken to an expert about this.
Well, Susan, Iran expert Sharam Akbarzadeh of Australia's Deakin University told me the Iranian parliament's action is quite predictable, since hardliners and critics of President Hassan Rouhani will not sit by and allow his government to sign a deal without a fight.
This is their last effort to torpedo the nuclear deal. But I think given the momentum and given the fact that the supreme leader is still supportive of the deal, Rouhani will manage to get the deal signed. But this is going to be an ongoing issue. We can't say this is a foregone conclusion, but there are good indications that Rouhani will get through to a good deal.
Iranian officials have indicated that nuclear scientists and some military sites will be off limits to inspection. France's foreign minister, Laurent Fabius, Sunday said it's unclear whether an international agreement can be reached on the nuclear program before June 30. He says everything must be allowed to be verified. Is that a problem?
What the Iranian parliament has passed could be open to interpretation. They have accepted that normal access will be granted, but extraordinary access to scientists and military sites could be an issue if that contravenes national security. Now, you can interpret national security in different ways, and a more relaxed interpretation of national security would still allow access to some scientists. So it's just going to be a question of how Rouhani manages to steer negotiations domestically and internationally.
What about the issue of lifting sanctions right away?
That is a very, very critical factor for Iran. Both the conservatives and the Rouhani's negotiating team, they have insisted that sanctions need to be removed immediately. So that's going to be a very big issue.
How likely will they be lifted right away?
I think if the P5 plus one give an agreement and a commitment to lifting it immediately, that promise itself could be a major win for Rouhani. Even if it takes a few weeks or months for the relative parliaments and legislations in their respective countries to ratify lifting of sanctions, the fact that they have made a commitment, I think that would be sufficient for Rouhani to sell the deal.
Obviously, sanctions are really hurting the Iranian economy.
Sanctions are critical. Rouhani's electoral win was very much based on the promise that he will remove sanctions and normalize relations with the international community in order to revive Iran's economy. That's the reason he is in office. He needs to deliver on that point.
With a little more than a week to go before the self-imposed deadline of June 30, how do things look in your view?
I think things are looking very good, but there is a chance that parties involved in negotiation will seek an extension and more time. And no one is saying that they are going to ask for it, but I think given the way negotiations have gone in the past and last-minute deals, there is a chance that they will get an extension of a few weeks.
That's Sharam Akbarzadeh of Deakin University in Australia. He says despite the strong opposition of key regional players, Israel and Saudi Arabia, to a deal, the international community is prepared, in his view, to look at the larger picture rather than parochial interests of those two countries. He says that bigger picture is that it's better to have Iran back in the international community where it can become a more constructive player for regional security and international order.
Well, thank you very much, Victor.
All right, Susan.
Coming up on International Edition, watching out for a popular social media outlet. And Kelly Clarkson is the star of our music feature.
The president, the pope, even many ordinary folks have Twitter accounts, including myself. But is that form of social media in trouble? Kevin Paul Scott, author of the book Eight Essential Exchanges, joins us to answer that question. Welcome.
Hey, it's great to be with you today.
Thank you, thank you. Well, what is up with Twitter?
Well, Twitter is struggling right now because they have a great number of users but have failed to figure out how to turn a serious profit. And because of that, the CEO has stepped aside. They kind of have a musical chair CEO right now, a guy who has been in there before. And they're trying to figure out, how are they viable? How can they be more user-friendly, and how can they sell more advertising? And it's a tough road to hoe for Twitter.
Well, do you have any suggestions on what they can do to prop themselves up?
Yeah, for a few things. First and foremost, Twitter needs to go outside the box with a big-name CEO or someone who's going to shake things up. What Twitter has done in the past has been effective, but, again, still not profitable. So they've got to be willing to try something new. Second, they've got to find a way to integrate advertising more effectively into their platform. For example, the Facebook system is just much more conducive to ads that are relevant to what the individual user is looking at. It's much easier to monitor and track results. Currently, on the Twitter platform, these ads are very clear that they're sponsored. They're things that we're typically not interested in, and we're scrolling over. And so Twitter advertisers have not seen the value. They haven't been willing to put the money into it. And without advertising revenue, Twitter either has to figure that piece out, or they've got to find ways to use their data for other streams of income.
Why is Twitter so popular? Why is it so appealing to people?
Well, the thing that Twitter has done that's been extremely effective is becoming a very quick news source for us, where we may turn to a platform like Facebook to connect with people we know. We may go to Instagram for our friends. We may go to LinkedIn for a business opportunity. Twitter is the best way to get concise news quickly. And so even many of the major news companies leverage Twitter as a way to get their headlines out and hope that you'll click and dive deeper into stories. And Americans like that. But for that reason, the thing that makes Twitter so great is also the thing that makes it more difficult to advertise.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much.
By the way, do you have a Twitter account?
Yeah, I do have a Twitter account.
Okay, well, thanks again and have a good day.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sagan, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
It's time for a little something from the music department. Here's VOA's David Byrd.
She won the very first American Idol, and now Kelly Clarkson has a new song that's climbing the charts. It's called Invincible. It's from her new CD, Piece by Piece, and Larry London joins me to talk about this tune. Larry,
well,
this is another anthem from Kelly Clarkson, I guess.
She's very good at creating music that people can relate to and connect with, and that's one of the keys to her success over the years. And the new album is great, Piece by Piece. She took an off-road for a little bit, did some country music, but she's kind of back in the main lane of the pop world and just finished off with a Heartbeat song, which was her 16th Top 40 single. And so the new song, Invincible, as you mentioned, It's an inspirational song. It's a very happy, positive song. And Kelly's in a very positive place right now, despite all of the criticism that she's been undergoing recently because of her weight gain. And so she's okay. She's happy with herself. She says, I love myself, and I am invincible, which is what this song kind of reflects and represents.
You know I was broke down. I hit the ground. I was crying now. I couldn't make no sound. No one hears the silent tears. You know I had lost hope, I was all alone, never been so low, till you came along, teacher, I feel
she had a baby, right? That's why she had some weight gain.
Well, she's always battled weight. That's been a problem that she's dealt with her entire life. She admits openly that the weight issues have always been troublesome for her. She did drop a few pounds a number of years ago, but since the baby, since the birth of River Rose, it has not been a very easy thing for her to get rid of the weight. But she's happy with herself, as she said. In fact, she said after she finishes her current tour, she's going to try and get pregnant again. She wants to have another baby by the end of this year. She wants to be pregnant.
And this song talks about, you know, issues like overcoming abuse. The video for it has different women in different scenarios. One woman is in a wheelchair. One woman is like in an abusive situation, you know, and it's different ethnicities, different races, et cetera. And is Kelly trying to broaden her appeal with the video, or what exactly is she doing there?
Well, that's an interesting question, David. Kelly, you know, currently appeals to quite a diverse group of people to begin with. They all like her and relate to her. She's a person who's overcome a number of obstacles, as we mentioned a little while ago. She grew up in a very small town in Texas, and they weren't very wealthy. Mom was an English teacher. And so, you know, she's considers herself to be the average kind of person. She doesn't look at herself as a star. She thinks her music is very relatable, and she's very reachable. She's very reachable. She's not kind of up on a perch or anything like that. She wants to be an everybody's person, and I think she comes across that way. You really like Kelly. She's genuine with everything she does. 25 million sales. She's won so many awards, including 12 Billboard Music Awards. So, you know, she's got the appeal that is necessary to make it in the music business these days. And the new song is doing very well. She performed it for the first time on television at the Billboard Award Show.
All right. That's VOA's Larry London. We'd love to hear what you think about this. You can go on to our Facebook page. That's VOA Music. It's facebook.com/VOA-music. You can leave your comments there. Larry also hosts VOA's Border Crossings, which has its own Facebook page. You can contact him there. Maybe he'll play Kelly Clarkson's Invincible.
Love to do it.
And thanks for joining us here for today's edition of International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned by the June 16 conviction and sentencing by a Bahraini court of Sheikh Ali Salman, the Secretary General of the Al-Wafaq Opposition Political Society. He was convicted of inciting hatred, promoting disobedience, and insulting public institutions. Sheikh Ali is also a Shia Muslim cleric. Sheikh Ali was jailed in December after he delivered a series of speeches calling for political reform and accountability after his re-election as party leader. His arrest triggered protests across the country. In 2011, at the time of the Arab Spring, dozens died when the government of Bahrain moved to quash protests demanding more rights and an end to discrimination against the majority Shia community by the Sunni royal family. Bahrain has dealt with sporadic unrest since then. The United States has consistently said opposition parties that peacefully voice criticism of the government play a vital role in inclusive, pluralistic states and societies. Creating an atmosphere in which a full range of political opinions can be peacefully expressed is essential in Bahrain, across the Middle East, and globally. Furthermore, this action by the Bahraini court has the potential to further inflame tensions. Amnesty International said Sheikh Ali's conviction was another clear example of Bahrain's flagrant disregard for international obligations and called for his immediate release. The United States believes that no one, anywhere, should be prosecuted or imprisoned for engaging in peaceful expression or assembly. Any charges against Sheikh Ali that were brought on that basis should be dropped. The U.S. also strongly urges the government of Bahrain to abide by its commitment to the protection of freedom of expression.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.